This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined from Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Sam, how's it going?
It's going very well indeed. This is another one of our special episodes. This is coming up for air. Who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce one of the younger members of our cohort, our very lovely Ella Swaggerman. Ella, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Ella. Where are you, Ella?
I am in Auckland at the moment, but I am a true Southlander, so off a dairy farm in Southland, and now I am working for Fonterra as a development technologist up in Auckland.
Whatever made you leave for Southland?
More opportunities in Auckland for the degree that I chose to do at Otago. So I studied consumer food science and nutrition at Otago and then jumped into the Master of Sustainable Business following the graduation.
So what was it like growing up on a dairy farm in Southland?
It was awesome. I spent a lot of time outdoors, but then equally a lot of time sort of cooking in the kitchen, helping mum out and helping make dinners while everyone else was out on the farm. So I had a real passion for food and was able to take that through to university. And then while I was at university, I was doing some internships for some meat companies. So I worked for Alliance and then for Silver Fern Farms after that. And after my internship with Silver Fern Farms, I actually never left. So I stayed working part-time for my last year of uni and then went full-time for a year as a food technologist there before, jumping back into milk.
With a splash.
Yeah.
So that passion for food came from home?
Yes, yeah. And I guess, you take it back to the farm gate, working on the farm, and I didn't spend a huge amount of time doing farm things, but I did spend a bit of time in the cow shed with Dad. And you just see how that's where your food starts, at the farm gate. And then sort of once it leaves the farm gate, you don't think too much about it, but there's actually a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes in terms of processing food. And I was largely unaware of what happened post the farm gate, but when I got to university, I sort of started to learn a little bit more about it. And I'm still learning so much about it. I mean, I go to work every day and I'm learning something new. But then I guess I wanted to tie in sustainability into that as well. You look at the farm gate and sustainability is increasingly becoming more important for farmers and for the future of our New Zealand food production systems.
With other foods, particularly meat, there's the paddock to plate tracing, and the hill that this dinner grew up on. Milk doesn't have that benefit because it all gets mushed together.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I guess milk traceability is a little bit harder. We're probably not there yet, but we're probably not far away either.
So what does a development technologist do?
So at the moment, I'm working for Fonterra Brands Oceania, and working in the consumer sort of leg of the business. So working on calciums, some milk powders, and some export products as well. So UHT milks into Taiwan, doing a few exciting projects, but can't talk too much about them.
But talking generically, when you say working on, is it like developing the mix of stuff and the processes that happen
so
to it?
Flavour modifications, process improvements, quite a bit of documentation. Surprisingly, there's a lot of paperwork and milk processing, specification updates and all sorts.
Cool. And sustainability, has that always been a thing for you as well?
Probably more so came in my last year of uni. I was learning a lot about sort of food production and food systems in a couple of my papers. And then I was working on a net carbon zero project at Silverfin Farms and wanted to know a little bit more about that. But then also realised how passionate I was about learning more about sustainability and wanting to actually be able to champion that for farmers and for the New Zealand food system. So the opportunity came up for me to pursue the Masters of Sustainable Business, which I'm actually very fortunate to be supported by the Meat Industry Association to do this Masters as well, which has been awesome.
You came across it in your internship in your third year and working in your third year. Had it not been a part of your nutrition degree?
Not so much, no. So I was more focused on human nutrition and macronutrients and micronutrients. But I guess there was a component of it. It's sort of something that sort of you might get 5 minutes of a lecture on sustainability and it's important, but then you sort of park it and move on. And I wanted to spend a little bit more time, I guess, delving into what sustainability actually means and how are we sustainable and can we actually clearly define what sustainability is. And I mean, there's so many different definitions and sustainability can be perceived in so many different ways. So actually being able to build a bit of credibility behind that has been an awesome opportunity.
I've got a question that I was going to save till the end, but I'm going to ask it now because you've just opened yourself up for it. What's your go-to definition of sustainability?
We had this discussion in class not that long ago about sustainability. And coming from nutrition, I sort of spoke to it as a bit of a plate model. So I think we all know about what a healthy plate model is. You sort of have half your plate of veggies, half your plate of carbs, and half your plate of like protein. And for a healthy, balanced diet, you have the right macronutrients and micronutrients. And I think the same can go for a sustainable food system or sustainability in general. It's where everything is thriving and you have a healthy balance of everything that's going on in your environment. Whether you're looking at the forest and you've got your sort of like diversity within that forest, and you can't just have a monoculture of one thing, because then if you're eating the same thing every day, you're not going to be your best. You're not going to be balanced. How are you supposed to thrive? And I think the same goes for sustainability. Looking at sort of overconsumption of certain things isn't great either. Underconsumption is not great. So how do we find that perfect balance? And it's challenging for humans in terms of a diet, but also challenging in terms of globally for sustainability. So I think really taking a balanced approach to looking at what sustainability actually is. And I think it's not over consuming, it's not under consuming, it's just being more conscious of what we're doing and how we're using the materials that we're consuming, doing it in a responsible way.
If you could wave a magic wand and redesign your nutrition degree to include those sorts of things that you've learnt more recently, what would you change?
I'd probably change my overall approach to sort of nutrition and probably consider it in a more balanced way. Thinking about sort of the papers that we did, a lot of them were sort of more targeted at sort of behaviour change and, like macro and micronutrients, like it's science, you can't really change that. But I guess probably incorporating a few more sustainability focused papers into what balance actually looks like and how do we consume products in a more sustainable and healthy way.
Can you taste sustainable?
I don't know. It depends. I mean, we launched Net Carbon Zero beef and lamb last year at Silvertone Farms. And I think, yeah, whether you're consuming Net Carbon Zero or not, it's just bringing more consciousness to where your food's coming from and how much of the product you're consuming.
I mean, clearly you can taste the freshness and so on of things from the farmer's market or organic or wherever. Can you do that at scale, and is that a sensible thing to do? Not necessarily the organic nature, but the sustainability at scale.
Well, I think you can definitely eat sustainably, whether you're eating at the farmer's market or not. It's just considering where your food's coming from and how much of it you're eating. Are you wasting it? It's all good and well to be buying the most sustainable produce, but if at the end of the day it sits in your fridge and decomposes, what's the point?
We've just got a sticker from the supermarket to put on I think you're supposed to put it on one of the shelves in the fridge. It says, eat me first. That seems like a sensible initiative.
Yeah, well, and I mean, reducing on food waste has a lot of benefits. I mean, personally, I try and avoid food waste if possible, because it not only it starts to get expensive when you're buying all this fresh produce and just letting it sit in your fridge and rot.
I must say, we did get distracted by putting the sticker onto toys and rocks and sticking them in the fridge. Let's take your music track. We've got Don't Stop Believing by Journey. Why this one?
Just seemed like a good song. Yeah, just come back from a holiday, so feel like it, yeah, just suited the mood.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere. A singer in a smoky room, a smell of wine and cheap perfume. For a smile they can share the night. It goes on and on. We'll be right back.
Bubble, sprite of the forest, of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nā mihi araha nui, kia koutou, ka tahu ahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, the triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been so tough. We've had to deal with so much change and upheaval, and we've had to experience the world as we know it. Really, really shocking us into the understanding that things can change all of a sudden. And of course, it's so important that we understand that for all of us, we are in a process of recovery now. And that the world has shifted. And we are not able to return to the ways of life that we had before. We're not able to return to the comfortable assumptions that we had before. But we are able to move in new ways with the knowledge that we have gained. And of course, as a species, we have faced upheavals so many times over the last several hundred thousand years. We've had to survive ice ages. We've had to survive plagues. We've had to survive wars. We've had to survive huge natural disasters. We've had to survive so many things, and we have survived. And so I think it's important for us to remember how resilient and how strong we are as a species, and that in working together we become even stronger. I know for myself, of course, the living world is a huge comfort. And I feel a connection with all living things. And of course, we are related to all living things. And we are the children, we are the potahi on this earth. All these other life forms are much more ancient than us. And they are our ancestors too. They have made this world long before we evolved. It's wonderful for me, of course, at Orokinui Eco Sanctuary to see the moss and the lichen. And particularly the lichen, choosing whether to clone itself or reproduce sexually with fungal fruiting bodies. And just to see the different ways of life that surround us for different life forms, it's very inspiring. And I think this helps us to remember that we are free. That although the structures that contain us and the structures that we have come to rely on are often there to help us, we don't need to ascribe to them forever. We can create new structures and new frameworks of being that become us better. I know for myself that colour, beauty, art, creativity, all of those aspects of us as a species inspire me so much. When I see something that someone has crafted with their hands, something that they envisioned in their mind and then brought out into the world, it fills me with such hope and such pleasure. And I see these creations as treasures and as testaments to our human nature, to our creative nature. And all life is creative, just in its own unique fashion, like the bower bird, like any of these birds making their nests. They're all different, and it's beautiful to behold. So I really hope for you that you're having the opportunity to see each day reminders of our true nature as resilient, as creative, as adaptive, as innovative, and as nurturing. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Ella Zwagerman.
Ella, before we listen to your podcast, is there anything you would like our listeners to know before they start to hear? Anything in particular that you want them to listen out for?
Probably the only thing to listen out for, and I know this was mentioned in my podcast, but we sort of talked about managing the sense of chronic unease and dealing with like uncertainty in situations. And I think no matter how you relate to sustainability or the podcast itself, probably one of the most important messages that I got out of the conversation with Chuck was to put on your own oxygen mask before others, and really prioritizing just looking after yourself. Because, at the end of the day, you've got to put yourself first so that you can help others too, whether that be for sustainability purposes or just life in general. That message really hit home for me. While I was talking to Chuck, we were going through a restructure at work, and it was, a really valuable message just for life in general. So, I hope everyone likes listening to the podcast, and I'm sure everyone can find some sort of message to get out of it, because we did cover quite a lot and it was quite broad, coming from a food processing point of view, but then also dealing with scheduled hazardous substances. I mean, we really did talk about a lot. Welcome to another episode of the Master of Sustainable Business Cohorts Coming Up for Air series, an opportunity for us to talk to business leaders within New Zealand about their day-to-day role and considerations for sustainability. My name is Ella Zwagerman, and I am spotlighting today's podcast episode. I'm currently in my final paper for the Master of Sustainable Business, and outside of studying, I have a day job as a development technologist at Fonterra, and I'm truly passionate about working towards sustainable outcomes for New Zealand's primary sector. I had the absolute pleasure of speaking with Dan, also known as Chuck Norris, about process safety, systems thinking, and sustainability. Chuck has a diverse background spanning from the Navy to the Air Force, working in aerospace engineering, global consulting, and transformational processes, and is now the GM of critical risk and process safety at Fonterra. Chuck has been at Fonterra for almost 10 years, starting as the GM of engineering. This saw him looking after a large manufacturing footprint with a $15.6 billion asset base across 30 locations in New Zealand. 4 years ago, he moved into global critical risk, which is fundamentally process safety as we currently know it. He leads a team that is looking after scheduled hazardous substances and their catastrophic effects, especially when you get the scaled up volumes of chemicals, pressures, and energies that are used within milk processing. They work on making sure that the technology that is being used within Fonterra is fit for purpose and that the processes are managed in ways that are as safe as we can possibly make them, especially when involving hazardous substances. With Fonterra processing approximately 16 million litres of milk annually, the processing and therefore the cleaning procedures that are required in order to make sure that milk quality and food safety are maintained, it requires using a huge volume of hazardous substances. It is simply unavoidable. I asked Chuck about the management of these hazardous substances and what the sustainability considerations were. Here's what he had to say.
Yes, and a lot of people don't connect things like the UN SDGs to little old safety in an organisation, but when you think about Goal 3, 3.8 in particular, and the International Labour Organization, there's mass moves to ensure that work is safe, not only for the worker, but for the communities we work in. When you think about the scale of chemicals and hazardous substances that we use as a manufacturing organization, it can have some really catastrophic impacts on people, the environment, and the communities. And so this concept of turning the dial up a little bit more based on the consequence, looks after both significant human harm, but also significant environmental damage. And so typically the focus is of process safety in particular for chemical holdings, has those two fundamental lenses, human harm and environmental damage. And there's plenty of case studies that indicate where we haven't quite got it right as a society, as a global society. There are case after case after case of not getting it right. And we're either hurting people, many people in some cases, or we're significantly, and in many cases, irreversibly damaging the environment.
Thinking more about process safety and the Sustainable Development Goals, managing hazardous substances and their associated risks touches Goal 3, Good Health and Wellbeing, as Chuck mentioned, more specifically Goal 3.8. But considering the other relevant Sustainable Development Goals includes clean water and sanitation, decent work and economic growth, sustainable cities and communities, responsible consumption and production, life below water, and life on land are all sustainable development goals that have some sort of direct or indirect relevance to process safety. Following this, we discuss sustainability targets, because like all large organisations, Fonterra has a set of sustainability targets and goals to work towards. I asked Chuck about how process safety practices are being developed or worked on to align with the long-term environmental sustainability targets. Reduction, substitution, and elimination of hazardous substances is the most obvious solution to becoming more sustainable and ensuring safety. Because as Chuck put it, what you don't have can't leak. And here's a bit more on process safety principles and the management of hazardous substances.
Very first principle is, do you really need it? And in certain regard, do you really need it in those volumes? So as technologies advanced over time, and it will continue to advance, it gives us some options around substituting chemicals or eliminating complete chemical processes. That'll be at the general, the top level of decision making, do we or don't we? Then I think inside of that, the decision making that has a ramification on the environment is around what sort of options, let's say refrigerant, for example, what sort of chemical refrigerant can we use to achieve the outcomes we want to achieve? They each offer their own risks. So anhydrous ammonia is primarily toxic, and we've seen a recent incident just this week in Thailand in an ice factory. There was 174 people harmed. I think about 30 of those significant, sent to hospital, etc., with a explosion and a lost containment of toxic ammonia. A lot of people would say carbon dioxide isn't even classified as a hazardous substance, but when you're operating it at 50 bar pressure, it immediately whites out the room if it gets out of the pipe, and it will completely exhaust all the oxygen from the room. So in terms of its suffocant capacities, it's not so damaging potentially to the environment, but the human harm piece comes at the consequence. And then in a hydrocarbon sense, a butane or pentane is extremely flammable and explosive. And so the secondary effects of all of these three chemicals losing their containment or us losing control of them can be a cascading catastrophe. And that can lead to both human harm or significant environmental damage, depending on what secondary effects come about. And so those optionalities come with the requirement to significantly understand the risk. So what are the technically credible chains of events that can lead to those catastrophes in terms of an environmental problem? And therefore, what might be reasonable to stick in as layers of protection or worker engagement or competency in learning or emergency response to minimize those secondary effects? So all of the principles of process safety that we use are ultimately trying to avoid those catastrophe.
Coming from a food tech background, I care about the products that are being produced in the plants, but this cannot be done without the application and consideration of process safety. I've always been told how important effective management of chemicals is. But I think connecting and realizing the extent of just how harmful some of the chemicals that we use in processing can be on people's health is another thing. It was at this point in our discussion that I had some reflections on the serious ramifications and implications of what happens when processes aren't correctly followed. Because while it doesn't happen often, sometimes things do go wrong, and in cases like these, they have the potential to go really wrong, causing catastrophic effects on both the environment and people's health. The hazardous substances that are used within manufacturing environments are a crucial part of processing, but we often avoid discussing them, assuming away from the complexity or undersimplifying the problems. A review published in the Reliability and Systems Safety Journal supported this discussion and urged businesses to consider the holistic approaches needed to control process safety risks. This article discussed how businesses find the balance between efficiency, cost pressures, and safety in process installations. It suggests that to reduce risk and ensure safety, we need to build resilience within both organisational culture and technical design. This reading very much aligned with the discussion surrounding process safety. There are huge complexities associated with hazardous substances. Chuck spoke to me about the sense of chronic unease working as a leader in these systems and technologies, but reiterated the importance of not letting it consume you to the point where you become risk averse. With all this in mind and the level of depth within the discussion, I took the opportunity to ask Chuck how he manages stress when dealing with the risks associated with scheduled hazardous substances. And here's what he had to say.
First and foremost, I fundamentally believe that you need to manage your own sense of chronic unease before you can help others. So it's the oxygen mask theory. Put your own mask on first. If you don't have a healthy sense of chronic unease and work out how to do that, both mentally and potentially in your physical presence when you're in those decision-making environments, that will naturally have an impact on those other people that are also trying to work out their healthy sense of chronic unease. So do that first. That's the first principle. And that takes a lot of time to get right. And this is kind of career mastery and not overreacting to risk and not becoming risk averse or not overly optimistic about things. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to communicate. And it takes a long time to work out how to hit the right key points with senior decision makers. So a lot of people would overly complicate stuff, and then the senior leader can't comprehend which way to make a decision on. Or we try and do it in three bullet points and completely dismiss all of the significance for that decision maker. So finding that sweet spot's really important. And that'd be the second thing, is finding the right sweet spot around a very technically complicated problem that then we put people next to, making it a sociological problem, and finding out how to really mix all of that up so that it's clearly and easily comprehended. That is superbly difficult. The third thing is to take on, some people might call it a servant leadership approach, or I call it a service orientation. So ultimately, I'm not accountable. I feel accountable, but I'm not accountable for the use of these technologies every day of the week. And so I think about providing the very best subject matter expert advice I can to those senior leaders that have otherwise got 10 other things to manage, the profit and loss, the food safety quality issues, the customer pressures, the sales and marketing. You know, they've got many other things going on. The best thing I can do for them is be that trusted advisor and provide a high level of subject matter expertise to the advice that I'm giving, and surround myself with suitable expertise to make sure that that's as comprehensive as I possibly can. Because no one person in a complex environment should assume they understand everything. And for some people, that's very hard to let go of. Knowledge is power when you're in the earlier portions of your career, or you want to be the all things to everyone. I think you make this dawning realization that you can't.
I think there's a few really valuable messages in that snippet, whether we are thinking about process and system safety or general life. The whole theory of putting your own oxygen mask on before you try and help others is so important and forgotten all too often. Further to this, knowing and recognizing that you can't be all things to everyone is another important message. No matter how impactful or important your role is, carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders just slows down your decision-making processes and overall enjoyment that you have for life and your job. The New Zealand Herald also recently published a few articles on workplace stress, managing larger workloads, and New Zealand workplace safety. Workplace stress intersects with sustainability and process safety by highlighting the importance of holistic organisational well-being. Cost-cutting measures and efficiency demands can create a culture of fear and uncertainty, eroding both employee morale and safety consciousness. Just as resilient process safety systems are vital for preventing accidents, fostering a supportive environment is crucial for sustaining employees' health and productivity. By addressing workplace stress proactively and encouraging people to look after themselves first, organisations can promote a culture of safety and resilience, enhancing both sustainability and safety outcomes, while fostering a healthy, more productive workforce. To close out the conversation, I asked Chuck if he could change one thing right now that would have the most significant positive difference on the future, what would it be? And here's what he had to say.
I think the one thing, if it was unconstrained, and the one thing I would do, I would mandate the concept of education of systems thinking into our younger generation. I actually think the ability to think in holistic sense earlier in people's career and to embrace the concept of systems thinking. So that is before you can walk in other people's shoes, you must step back and have a look at the bigger system. And I think we are very much taught how to be reductionists at school. We're told in the science formula, just use this formula. And by the way, temperature is 14 degrees. So just put 14 into the formula. And then you crunch the formula, you put 14 in, out pops the answer, and you get a tick, it's correct. And so you go through life thinking, oh, sweet, someone's going to tell me what the temperature is. And then you get into the real world and no one tells you what the temperature is in that magic formula. And you realize that the world's a lot more complex than just do this and just do that. And so I think systems thinking approaches, as we're discovering in more modern institutions, teaching the younger generation how to be systems thinkers and use the proven methodologies in that regard would allow us to grapple with some of the more complicated problems we face into in our Anthropocene. And technology is not going to get any less complex as we go forward. And so our critical thinking and the way in which we approach those problems needs to also advance.
I like the idea of integrating systems thinking into the education setting early on, as it has huge potential to change the way that the next generation of learners and problem solvers think about and approach problems. Having just recently been exposed to systems thinking myself, it has been a real game changer in terms of the way that I am able to think about and solve problems. But that brings me to the end of today's podcast episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening and learning. We've covered a bit of everything in today's episode, from process safety to scheduled hazardous substances, food processing, and the associated sustainability considerations. As well as this, we've managed to discuss managing workplace stress, prioritising looking after yourself before trying to help others, and lastly, encouraging more systems thinking as an approach to have a positive impact on the future. That's all from me, but stay tuned to hear from the rest of the cohort as they come up for air to showcase leaders within New Zealand businesses. Thank you.
Ella, thank you very much. That actually just took me on a journey I didn't expect to go on. And we all think about risks, and we think about risks in context of our own practice spaces. But actually, some of the things you guys covered in that podcast, I was unprepared for. And actually, the man who just came to mow my lawn, said to me, Marweta, gosh, you're doing a lot of hours at the moment in all your various roles. And I said, yes, I am. And he said, what are you doing to look after yourself? And I said, oh, I don't know, taking on more work. Because what else do you do? And then it just really got me thinking about all of the things that you covered in your podcast. It was so much going on. What was your big takeaway?
My big takeaway would have been, and I think, yeah, we mentioned it just before, looking after yourself, putting yourself before others, because, I mean, no matter how much you're doing, and I personally juggle quite a few balls myself, between full-time work, study, and a couple other commitments, there's a lot going on. And I think really just taking a step back to make sure that you're putting energy and time into looking after yourself so that you are able to make decisions and you can manage risks, whether that be in the workplace or your own personal life. I found that was really valuable sort of life lessons from Chuck, but then also really enjoyed sort of hearing his perspectives of like sort of food processing and managing safety, because we hear a lot about it at work. But I don't think I ever really quite understood the seriousness of some of those critical risks and those scheduled hazardous substances. Personally, I do e-learnings at work to meet the requirements so that I can go on plant and make sure that I'm doing my job. But I don't think anyone really takes them as seriously as what we probably should. And yeah, that really hit home for me, just the extent of which some of the chemicals and the quantities of some of the chemicals that we're dealing with at site is just astronomical. So, yeah, I really enjoyed being able to interview Chuck.
It gave me an insight that I never had. I don't think about people going off to work in a milk factory and actually their whole lives being online to do their job so that I can make myself a latte in my kitchen. It actually really gave me a lot to think about.
Yeah, and I guess that's the case with every food product that we pick up. Like, I mean, the number one most important thing for food products is that they're safe for consumers, and for us to have safe products, we need to make sure that we're using the chemicals that would like help us meet those requirements. And no matter what industry we're in, you have to use harsh chemicals to clean products and clean production lines prior to using them. So yeah, safety is the most important aspect of food processing and food safety. And I guess you never know where sort of my career will end up. I'm very early on in my career journey. But yeah, definitely very interested in processing and safety following that conversation.
Ella, when I was talking to the lawn mowing man about my lawn mowing man is an interim lawn mowing man while my usual lawn mowing lady is away overseas, and I knew him from a different context. He was a policeman last time I saw him, and I was like, gosh, that's a big change. And we talked about your podcast today, and one of the things he talked about is one of the reasons he left the police is he was one day sitting outside and all of a sudden his body wouldn't work and he didn't know what was wrong with him. He had got to the absolute end of his ability to cope with the stress that was happening in his professional space, and his body just said, I'm not doing anything anymore, I'm done. And so how do you avoid, you're balancing a lot, and you actually have a lot of responsibilities. How do you stop that happening to you? What's your strategy?
I think you really just have to take a step back and put things in perspective. For my position at the moment, there's a lot of people to support me. I've got a lot of seniors above me who are able to help and share their learnings with me. But then I think you've got to really try and get that work-life balance. And I definitely have struggled in the past trying to balance that. There was a time last year where I was doing 3 papers and working full-time and travelling for work and trying to do everything else. And that's not always the healthiest way to live life. But I think, yeah, I've sort of had to learn to take a step back and just sort of recognise that there's certain things that need to be done to a really high standard, but then there's other things that you probably don't need to try and strive for perfection. sometimes just getting it handed in and done is good enough. I definitely probably could have spent another 3 hours trying to edit the podcast to make it perfect, to put little music in it. But at the end of the day, you really do just have to sort of cut your losses at some point and just hope for the best. And yeah, life has, you have so much more than just your job or your study. I'm running at the moment, so I'm still in my running clothes. I went for a run at lunchtime. You just have to try and balance things and try and work out what works for you. And I think as long as you're eating well and sleeping and trying to make time for others in your life as well, you can manage everything. It's sometimes easier at times than other times of the year, but it sort of comes in waves.
Chuck says somewhere that in the real world, no one tells you what the formula is.
Yeah.
Do we need to get better at preparing people for that? We send them through school and to tertiary education and tell them what all the answers are. In fact, we even have the questions. And quite often in practice, we don't even know what the question is.
Yeah, and there is no roadmap for life. And I think that's probably what being one of the biggest shocks for me is that once you actually leave school and leave uni, there's no roadmap. There's no one telling you what you need to do or when you should do it. And there's no A pluses to be handed out either. I mean, I wake up every morning, I go to work. I don't get an A plus for that. I get a paycheck. But, you don't always get that same validation that you get at school or at uni. And that's definitely been a big learning for me.
Maybe we should start handing out some A pluses. I have some questions to end the show with. What's the biggest success you've had in the last year or two?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I'm the best person to celebrate success. I really struggle with it. I also don't really set goals. But probably the biggest success has just been learning to let go of things and not try and control everything in my life. I think I spent so long trying to do everything so perfectly and control everything that I possibly could to make sure that I had the perfect A pluses, that everything was on track at work, even when it was outside of my control. So I think really just trying to chill out a little bit more and enjoy life as it is. I think 3 weeks ago I decided that I wanted to go to Japan. I'd pulled some money out of my savings and I just went because life's short and you just have to live. The work's always going to be there, and you can always make excuses for not doing something. So yeah, I definitely think just trying to chill out a bit, take a step back and do a little bit more, live life, and at the end of the day, yeah, you can save all the money that you want, and yeah, but what's the fun in that if you can't enjoy it?
What was the best bit about going to Japan?
Definitely just experiencing the culture and the food. Being able to walk through the streets of Japan and not really being able to speak their language, communicating using like your phone and pointing at things, and it was truly such a beautiful place and the people were lovely. I felt so incredibly safe. The streets were so clean, there wasn't rubbish anywhere, very conforming. It was incredible.
What's your superpower?
That's a hard question. I have no idea.
No idea.
I've got one for you, Ella.
What's your superpower?
Your superpower is, it's a funny one, is that you have the ability to be a champion for things even if it's not popular. And not everybody can actually do that.
That's true. I do stay very true to myself. I would say that I do. I stand strong in my values. And
you do.
Yeah, try and champion.
I admire that so much about you.
It's definitely been challenging at times when it feels like you're going against the grain, but I think you do really just have to stay true to yourself and what you believe in. And I know why I'm in class, I know why I'm here, and I want to, if at the end of the day I can educate one or two people to think that farming's not such a bad thing and that it is more sustainable than probably what the media makes it out to be, then I think I've probably achieved exactly what I wanted to in this degree.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No, I would say I'm probably more neutral. I stand strong in my values in class and in situations where I'm comfortable, but I wouldn't say I'm an activist.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Probably knowing that there's farmers getting up before me to milk cows so that everyone in Auckland can have their coffees in the morning.
You don't feel compelled to get up at 5 o'clock in solidarity?
I sometimes do get up at 5 o'clock. I'm not milking cows, but I'm doing other sorts of work.
So what is the biggest challenge or opportunity you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
I'm looking forward to completing my master's because I think I'll have a lot more free time after that to do something else. I'm not sure what that looks like, but I'm not sort of the type of person to just do one thing. I see completing the master's as an opportunity for me to look at doing something else or learning something new as well. But then also, just looking forward to sinking my teeth into my new role as a development technologist at Fonterra and everything that that has to offer.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Probably just keep swimming. I mean, it's kind of relevant coming up for air. It was my suggestion for the podcast title. Sort of a way for us to get some airtime and talk about our issues and championing our sustainability sort of perspectives. Just keep swimming. It all makes sense one day. Even if it doesn't right now, I'm sure it will at some point.
Thank you for that. Any advice the advice is to keep swimming is the best advice ever. Mawira.
Ella, it has been joyful sharing a learning space with you. You actually have really challenged me because I've got my very hard and fast 52-year-old, been doing this for a long time, don't like anything that makes a mess or uses resources or anything, but your perception and your passion for what you do and your reminder to us all the time to not be hypocritical, because I can't stand there drinking my latte and criticizing everybody who's had a hand in giving me the milk to drink my latte. It's quite interesting, and I'm thankful for that actually, because your passion for what you do made me more honest about how I live my life. And so thank you for your podcast. Thank you for the amount of work that you put in, which was extremely obvious, as everybody would have heard, and for you being you. And I do think you are an activist, actually. I do absolutely call you an activist in the most positive, beautiful way. Thank you for everything that you've brought to this, Ella, and all the best for the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, I have got two songs that you can choose between to go out to. One of them is Ernie, the fastest milkman in the West.
And he drove the fastest milk car in the West.
And the other is George McAnthony's Eyes of the Ranger.
Cause the eyes of the ranger are upon you.
We'll go Eyes of the Ranger.
Done.
In the eyes of a ranger, the unsuspected stranger had better know the truth and wrong from right.
Cause the eyes of the ranger are upon you. Any wrong you do, he's gonna see. When you're in Texas, look behind you. Cause that's where the ranger's gonna be.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This was an episode from our Coming Up for Air series. Today's presenter was Ella Zwagerman with Mawira Karatai. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mati wā.
In the eyes of a ranger, the unsuspected stranger had better know the truth, wrong from right. If you see him coming round,
this podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.